Hello and welcome to the MetaRoy podcast. This is your host Prashant Roy. So today we have Subha Chugh in the house. She is a legal professional who works in the Web3 space. Before you drop off this podcast, I'm letting you know that she will actually help you understand legalese, like she will explain it to you like a five-year-old. So we are going to have a lot of fun on this podcast and hopefully we'll learn a lot of things. So stay tuned till the end and let's see how it goes. Subha, thank you for joining us today. It's my pleasure to welcome you on this podcast. How is it going?
Thank you, Prashant. It's going a little bit too hectic right now. I've got a lot of personal engagements too. Turns out my family, we have consecutive birthdays and anniversaries and a lot of family events and some personal stuff that's coming up. So I'm mostly out doing stuff, busy all day. I think this is the second time we've had to schedule this, and I almost cancelled this time as well. You've been very accommodating and thank you so much for that. I did not mean to be this much of a diva.
Hopefully, but don't worry about it. And thank you so much for taking the time out today in your busy schedule. So let's talk about Web3. Like, how did you come into being into Web3? From a legal perspective, you would really love to know what has your story been and why did you choose the Web3 space particularly?
So initially when I started studying law, I was bitten by the litigation bug. I think, you know, everybody has that idea. When you think of law, you're thinking of that typical criminal defense attorney and, you know, standing in court and going all tariq pe tariq thing. And so yeah, that is what I had in mind as well. I worked with some of India's finest criminal lawyers and I studied criminal law really, really well. In fact, I slept through my corporate law classes. I hope nobody, I hope a prospective employer doesn't see this because I slept through my corporate law classes. I slept through anything related to corporate because I was just so hard and focused on litigation as a career that I was like, I'm ready to ignore everything else. Even though a lot of people told me the litigation is hard, it requires a lot of hard work and, you know, it takes a lot of time to establish yourself, especially if you're a first generation lawyer that I am. So, but I was completely criminal focused. I remember that when I was interning with senior advocate Vikas Pawa, he is one of India's best criminal defense attorneys. He represented Shashi Tharoor, he's represented DLF, he's had a lot of high profile cases. One of his clerks pulled me aside one day and said, "You know what, madam, once you graduate, go into corporate. You will make a lot of money, trust me, and then you will remember that I said this to you someday." And at that time, I dismissed it. He told me that, you know, you have that mind, you will do it. And I dismissed it that day because, like, you know, okay, fine, yeah, whatever, I want to go for criminal litigation. But now that I am in somewhat of a corporate setting, I think about it so often that he was so right. I am thinking about him. So my journey in corporate started from, I basically started getting invested in the idea of startups. I had this idea at the back of my head that I wanted to be the part of the next Google or like the next LinkedIn or like the next big thing. And in college, I was very, I was obsessed with finding new startups. I worked with Trell when I was probably one of their first users. I used that platform when they were barely launched. I worked with them when they had barely launched. I worked with a lot of other companies at their initiation. And that was the time when I began to sort of appreciate that in an organization or in something that is new or just starting up, somewhere or the other, your knowledge comes slightly secondary to your expertise and the way you can handle the situation. Like, I will never say that knowledge and years in terms of experience are something that can be substituted. No. But there is, you know, there's a certain, there's a difference between having knowledge and having years as you know, a number of years as an experience, and then having that application of mind where you can just spontaneously come up with, okay, yeah, this is how this needs to be resolved. Conventionally, okay, out of the box thinking, if you might call it. But yeah, I saw that in the startup sphere, there was especially when it came to, you know, regulations and handling things and, you know, not conventional management, but just getting things done, getting work done. That was something that people were lacking, that line of thinking. You know, Trell, Woovly, these kind of organizations, they wouldn't have people on board to help them with compliances. And I started appreciating that fact that for people like them, my skills are valued. And they're valued way beyond than a normal person or a normal litigant would value them. And that was when I started thinking that, you know, maybe this is something that can be explored. And then lockdown happened. I had an internship with a very good legal firm lined up, shut down, everything shut down. And I was just sitting at home doing nothing. And I got so comfortable sitting at home because, you know, you're close to your family and you're at the comfort of your own home. When things started getting back into action, like the unlock thing happened, I was a little reluctant to step out because of, you know, how comfortable I had gotten in that environment. But eventually I was looking for new opportunities and I stumbled upon Polygon. I mean, at that point, I was just looking up random companies and applying on positions that were just randomly, not even meeting their prerequisites. There would be positions saying you must have minimum 10 years of experience, and I would be applying them. I haven't even graduated yet, and I would just be applying and sending my CV for no good reason, just because I can. Like, nobody's coming and judging me for it. So when I saw Polygon's posting, they did not mention any kind of prerequisite. They just mentioned, we are looking for somebody to handle this. So I wrote them, I sent them my CV and I wrote them a huge cover letter. And I focused on the fact that, you know, you haven't mentioned any specifications. So technically I'm qualified because I can do all this. And I don't know if it was luck. I don't know if it was the person who saw that cover letter. But 2 days later, I got a response from them. And I got a response, when are you available for an interview? And trust me, at first I thought it was a scam, because I wasn't expecting it. I did not understand the whole thing. I had looked up Polygon. I did not understand what blockchain was. I did not understand what this whole tech thing was. I hadn't even gone through it that thoroughly. But I responded. I sat for the interview, and they rejected me. First of all, they rejected me. I was very upset. I called up their hiring manager and I was like, ma'am, you know, I would like your feedback. This was my first interview. I don't know why I was rejected and this and that. She listened to me. My patient was like, we just rejected you because we are looking for full-time graduates right now and you haven't graduated yet. There's nothing in terms of your caliber. And if there's a position that opens up, we'll let you know. And 2 days later, she calls me back again to offer me the position. She says, right now you'll be an intern. Once you graduate, we'll call you a legal counsel for the company. But right now, you'll come on board as an intern. And I was over the moon. I was very happy. And that was like my first introduction to a Web3. I don't have a very huge Web3 experience. I would be very upfront. My Web3 experience begins from December of 2021. That is how far back it goes. And I worked with Polygon till June. And now I'm working with Fire. So that is how how it has been. And when I was working with Polygon, that idea that I had that, you know, startups don't have somebody to tell them about compliance. In Web3, you have nobody, literally nobody. Huge Web3 companies are doing huge transactions, huge business dealings without an iota of legalities involved. Like, coming from a legal perspective, it was a bit shocking to me, you know, especially in conventional sense of the law. I don't know, maybe that is not the, you know, norm otherwise, but in my family, we're a bit too cautious. We're always, you know, give it to me in writing, give it to me in this, sign it first, write it on a piece of paper. And I'm like, here we're doing 10 rupees transaction and giving things in writing. There you are doing 100,000 transactions with such huge consequences potentially. without, worrying about how it would look from a legal or a compliance standpoint. It also stems from the fact that there is nothing that can be adhered to. You know, there is no law, there is no... Right now, it's like the Web3 industry is here and the law and the regulations are lying somewhere in the ditch somewhere.
So, everybody has this question around the Web3 and the crypto space that is it legal, right? Which is kind of detrimental to the overall space and detrimental to people who want to invest or kind of build products or even want to build a career in this space, right? And there is always this question, like, what is going to be the future of this industry? So what can you tell us about the Web3 space, because you have personally worked in this space, and what is the future of this industry, and what is it from a legal standpoint that is currently the Indian government's legal standpoint on crypto and Web3?
So I'll go step by step. First of all, legalities really depend from territory to territory. Like in China, they've put a blanket ban on cryptocurrency. If we talk about India specifically, India's stance in general to anything is always precautionary, be it surrogacy, be it technology, be it anything new, any new thought that you have, your legislation is going to put a ban on it. Sabse pehle they're going to be like, stop it. Then they will think about it. Then maybe later on they will try and bring about some kind of a regulation. Then that will prove to be insufficient. Then they will bring out another regulation. So in that extent, I mean, it's going to be a long time before we have a proper legislation or a piece of regulation that, properly regulates this space. Initially, the RBI put a blanket ban on crypto. The courts reversed it. The Supreme Court reversed that order. And now our own government, our own RBI, our own finance minister says, tumhe karna hai to kar lo, par hame nahi pata iska kya hoga. Like, we are not gonna, that is literally what they say. Like, we are cautioning you. We are not saying it's legal, but we are not saying it's illegal either. So you want to, you do it. But we don't know anything as of now. That is a very unfortunate stance, I would say, because at the end of the day, be it today, be it tomorrow, be it next month, or be it 10 years down the line, this is the future. It's coming, whether we like it or whether we don't like it, whether it is misused or it's used properly and for the good. That is a secondary question. It's coming for sure. And I believe that instead of having a reluctance or a resistance to it, the sooner we accept that it's coming and start working towards it, the better it's going to be. In terms of, as I said, initially, India was very reluctant banning crypto completely. Now they are accepting it, even though they don't have any legislature, they don't have any regulations to regulate it. They're accepting it because there are many governments who are entering into MOUs with companies, trying to bring their systems on the blockchain, especially police systems for better, information circulation from within. Of course, it eases the system. It makes them feel that, we're doing something for the future. But the thing is, right now, at this stage, the way the world is, we are at the brink of a huge, we're at the brink of this cliff, and at ahead of us, there's this huge path of innovation. Right now, everybody is building. This space hasn't boomed, it's booming, it's beginning. And there is a lot of, intellect, by sheer number, there's a lot of talent in India. This is something I really emphasize. In India, there is a lot of talent, especially in a Web3 space. We've got people who are brilliant at what they do. We've got people who work twice as hard as, categorically, I would say people in the West too, because we have that sense of, hard work and that level of dedication towards our work from within that I mean, it is not something good, but in terms of, As a worker, yes, I would say that, we work a lot harder than other people do. We are cheap labor. And I would say that we are missing out on something huge. when you talk about brain drain, when you read about the concept right now, the way it's happening, it's immense. You say, or, you know, you read about Polygon and every news entity is going to call it, oh, Indian startup Polygon, Indian startup this, Indian startup that. It's not an Indian startup. The founders are not citizens of India anymore. They're not paying taxes in India. They don't have any entity in India. How are you calling it an Indian startup? It is such a huge company. It had such huge potential. We drove them out. We are driving out Web3 people today. Any company, any business, any Web3 sphere. You look at WazirX founders, they want to go shift to UAE. Anybody in India, they, you know, reach a certain level where they can actually help the country in terms of, you know, raising employment, helping the economy. The regulations hit them so hard that they have no other option but to leave. So we have a huge potential that we're driving away because of our unfriendly nature. And that, I feel, is something that, you know, somebody needs to shake the government and be like, see, this is what's happening. I mean, if your revenue, how else do you want your country? You say make in India. On the one hand, you're promoting make in India. On the other hand, you are driving away people who want to make in India. That is, you know, not the way you do business. And I completely understand that. This is me from somebody in the Web3 sphere. I'm criticizing that, you know, India is driving away people. India is not being friendly to people. In fact, not just Web3. I feel like Web3 brings with itself not just a technological advance, but a change in the way we live life and look at life. The whole idea of decentralization, global, you know, having a global connect, having information out there, you know, the idea of privacy, the principles of Web3 are something that is going to impact life in general. Web3 companies don't function in a normal office right now. Most of them have global teams. Most of them have decentralized teams. So if you're working all over the globe, can you imagine? I mean, I don't understand why right now India is not the hub for Web3 companies to hire. You get cheap labor, you get, you know, amazing workers. I don't know why everybody is not hiring in India. India has an employment crisis. On the one hand, we're crying that our people don't have jobs. Make employment regulations that are friendly, that make remote hires easier. And what all do you need? Your people are going to get employed. Your people are going to get employed at good wages. Your people are going to get benefits. Those companies would be happy to hire them because if I am a lawyer in India and if somebody has to hire a lawyer in the US, that guy is going to charge 10 times as much as I do. You're going to hire 10 subhas in that sense. Of course, as a company, it makes more sense for you to hire here as well. But we are just so reluctant, just so, you know, afraid of what we don't know. And then we refuse to know and understand that I feel it's causing a huge, I feel like it's doing a lot of damage. But this is me from a Web3 standpoint, from a regulatory standpoint. I understand that as somebody who needs to draft a law or who needs to draft a regulation or who needs to, you know, putting myself in the government's position, I need to draft a piece of paper that is going to govern the behavior of millions of people, that is going to impact millions of people. I cannot be careless about it. I cannot be thoughtless about it. I need it to be formulated in such a way that it covers all the bases. It does good for my people, protects their rights, you know, as well as facilitates that particular activity. And if you really think about it from the point of a legislator or from the perspective of a regulator, it is an incredibly difficult task. It's like right now, can you even list all the potential problems that can arise from Web3 usage on a piece of paper? But a law is supposed to have that. A regulation is supposed to have that. You can't keep re-releasing regulations. Okay, today I'll take out this notice. It's not working. Let's, you know, recall it. We'll pull out another one. That is not how it works. So from a legislative's point of view, since this industry is still beginning to develop, it is still in that development stage, it is difficult for a legislator or a government or a regulator to foresee what kind of problems can arise, what kind of regulations do you even need? Like, okay, for example, crypto. You have a law, if I pay you money and, you know, you don't give me the services, I can take you to court. I can, you know, I can show them this bank account. Okay, I paid Prashant Roy in this bank account. Your information is there. Your PAN is there. If the police calls up the bank, they're going to know all your information. Now, when you're dealing with transactions on the blockchain, you have a lot of anonymous. Blockchain provides you anonymity. Blockchain provides you privacy. When you're dealing with anonymous people on the blockchain, how do you regulate it? How do you hold people accountable? Where is the accountability? You have DAOs. You have the whole principle of a DAO, of not having one person in charge, of not having a centralized governance system, but a decentralized governance system. Now, tomorrow, if a DAO does something illegal, how are you going to hold the DAO responsible? Are you going to track down every person to ever have participated in the DAO? You're going to track down every IP address and go after them? I mean, thinking of it from a legislative point of view, it is not an easy task.
I have so many questions, Subha, but let's take that one by one. So essentially, you mentioned you started with Polygon, right? You worked with Polygon a lot. So when I see a startup like Polygon, and obviously we have kind of driven them out with our unfriendly policies, so as to say, but how do you establish a structure for an entity like Polygon? The DAO model, obviously, we do not have a relevant structure which works for the same way in India, right? We do not have a DAO entity which we can legally call it as a DAO in India, right? What are those structures that are currently available for Web3 startups to build their startups on? Can you talk a bit about that?
So as DAOs, you can't really get legally registered or obtain the status of a legal entity anywhere in the world except for Marshall Islands. And Wisconsin recently came up with a law. And I think maybe the Caribbean islands are probably bringing about certain legislations. They are going to enact some laws that is going to give some sort of a recognition to DAOs. But then see, if you want to register a DAO, in essence, you are negating the whole purpose of a DAO. How are you going to call it a legal entity if your whole idea behind creating it was to have a decentralized, non-regulated platform? Right. So when it comes to DAOs, even the idea of regularizing it, even if I bring a legislation into picture that, that you can get your DAO registered, but your whole principle of a DAO is having an unregistered, unregulated, decentralized entity, right? So it contradicts the whole purpose of it. I mean, I can't emphasize how much the two concepts are contradictory. Secondly, when you ask about the kind of structure that somebody in India does, see, it doesn't matter what is your, a DAO is completely different from, Polygon is not a DAO. If you want to conduct business, I would say as of right now, maybe there are DAOs that are going to prove me wrong. I hope there are, or maybe I don't hope there are. Once again, legal ambiguity. But if you want to develop a business, you are going to have to register as a company. You're going to want to have employees. You're going to want to have, forget Web3, any company or any business that you're starting up. There are certain logistic things that go about the same way, whether you're in Web3, Web2, Web1, non-web, tech, non-tech. You know, be it employees, payrolls, office furniture, logistics, back-end offices, all of these things need to be figured out. So for them, you will obviously make yourself into a private limited company and, you know, you'll form directors. So that is a very conventional. That is not something that most people face trouble with, because what you're dealing with is entirely different. I'm just opening a business entity. It's my company. I can do whatever with it I want, as long as, you know, I'm not doing anything unlawful. And if I'm providing certain tech services, I'm developing a particular technology or I'm developing a software, that's all right. It's my company. I can do what I want. So nothing wrong with that. That is not where the problem arises. The problem arises later on when, you know, when you see, as long as it's like having a toothache. if you've gotten a cavity inside your tooth, as long as your tooth is not aching, it's fine, right? But the moment it's prodded, that is when you realize, or that is when the dentist will see, okay, it has gotten, it's rotten all the way inside. So it's later on when somebody, you know, when you reach a particular stage and a regulator or a compliance officer comes to you and says, okay, open your books now. That is when you get in trouble. And it is not something that only Web3 companies do. That is something that any company, any startup, or, you know, any business can run into, compliance and regulatory issues. The problem is that for regular businesses, there is a checklist of compliances they can meet or not meet. They can hire lawyers, they can hire professionals who, you know, because this has been existing. Our Companies Act, the original one, was existing from what, 18 or 1900s. You know, your regulatory checklist, the conventional way of doing things, it's well established. So if I have a conventional business, I know that if I am, you know, transacting with you tomorrow, I need to have an agreement, I need you to sign this, I need you to sign that, I am giving you money, I need to have proof of that transaction. That's fine. From a regulatory standpoint, I need to file my books of accounts by this date, I need to submit my ITR, I need to show my profits, whatever, that is conventionally done. When it comes to a Web3 company or a Web3 business, the problem is there is no such checklist. If you want to release an IPO tomorrow, SEBI has an entire book full of guidelines that you have to get your valuation done by these valuators, you have to submit these papers, you cannot release your shares at this price, at this date, and this way, you have to get your exchanges registered. But if you want to release your tokens, you come up with a token currency, you want to release your tokens, you can price them whatever you want, because there's no regulation there, nobody's governing it. You can sell them for whatever you want, you can do whatever you want with it, no registration, nothing with it. So that is where the problem arises, both for the business person as well as the regulator. Because from a business standpoint, you're like, I don't know what needs to be done, so how do you expect me to do it? But from a regulatory and from the lawmaker's point of view, how can I allow this activity to continue when, suppose, you know, I come up with a token, okay, this one token is for 1 lakh rupees. You can do you, and I am accepting cash. Come to my house, deposit 1 lakh rupees, and I will give you that one token. That kind of transaction has huge illegal, you know, implications of whole money laundering and illegal transactions, all of those things that come into picture. That is the problem. Not the structuring, not the, you know, the way the business is conducted, but the nature of the deep nature of the business. That is where the problem arises.
Got it. So even for people, and this is from personal experience I'm talking about, people who want to work in the Web3 space, a lot of people actually pay in crypto, right? And they have a lot of problem, you know, accepting those roles, because obviously crypto is not accepted widely in India, so as to say, right? So that is also kind of a detrimental factor when it comes to working in the Web3 space. So what do you think, what should be done to actually help those people accept crypto? Or maybe is there a structure that is planned out to accept crypto in terms of salary, as a remuneration point of view? Have you seen any structures around that?
See, right now, because there is no regulation, whatever you are doing is fine. I mean, in essence, that is what it means. Practically, what companies do is that most of the time, what I have seen, that people who pay you in crypto are also companies who are still in that stage where they probably don't have proper employment contracts, where they are, you know, they are not bootstrapped, they are still funded, they are still developing, they are still taking, you know, they're still in the making. If their internal structure is also sort of figuring out, going strictly by what we have as guidelines presently, if you want to accept salary in terms of crypto, nobody can stop you. Okay? Nobody can say the money that you're receiving is, you know, see, you get the crypto in your wallet, you exchange it, you get it in your account, you report it as salary. You show it as salary. I'm not aware if any viewer is aware of the taxation related to crypto. So there is a 1% TDS deduction in any crypto transaction. And the government recently released that there's a 30% tax that you have to pay on any Web3, on any you know, crypto or any, why am I calling it NEFT? NFT or crypto transaction, you have to pay 30% tax as well. So, from all my understanding and my talks with the experts, any TDS that is deducted is refundable to you based when you file your income tax returns. If your income is less than the taxable amount, or if they've collected any excessive tax, so you don't really need to worry about that. Personally, I understand it's detrimental, but on the one hand, if you're going to file your ITR, even if somebody is taking 10 rupees from you right now, but if you know that they are going to return it to you at the end of the year, then that's fine, right? Even your salaries would get a deduction of 10% TDS. Half the payments you make or receive need to have TDS deducted. I feel like, okay, that's fine. That is one way, that 1% tax is fine. When we come to the 30% taxation, it is only applicable if you are trading and deriving profits out of crypto or NFT. So if you're receiving crypto as salary, you don't have to pay that 30% tax. You show it as salary. You say that this is, you know, my salary. This is my breakdown of my salary. And this is how I'm receiving my salary. It's been converted into INR. That's different. And you've run it through an exchange. That is completely not the law's perspective. You can safely keep accepting crypto as salary. No issues there. Nobody's going to stop your money. The only problem that arises here is the fact that when you get any kind of payment in fiat, that payment is traceable. That payment, if tomorrow there are any allegations, against your company or against your employer or anybody who's paying you, anybody who sees, okay, fine, you know, she provided these services to this employer or this person, this is how she was paid, these are the accounts, that's fine. When you have crypto payment, it's difficult to trace the source of the funds. So there can be a prima facie assumption of siphoning off of money. I don't know. You don't know how much crypto was sent to me. From where the crypto was sent to me. Where did that original crypto come from? You know, if Singapore has an exchange, hypothetically, okay, so I think Indonesia is coming up with its first regularized crypto exchange. So hypothetically, let's not take Indonesia, let's take that there is a place that allows you to convert cash into crypto, or that allows you to convert fiat into crypto, a regularized exchange, but that is not present in India. You don't know what money or money from where has been converted into crypto to pay you. Whereas when you're receiving funds in general, that is traceable. So that is the only, you know, and because of this inherent mistrust, okay, crypto and all this is black and dark web and dark this, and, you know, that can probably give a suspicion or give a prima facie assumption that, you know, this money is coming from an illegal source. But apart from that, if you're receiving your salary as crypto, that's completely fine. And as long as you're okay with it, technologically, you're fine. You know, your wallet is secure, your exchange is secure. It's all well and good.
Got you. In terms of business dealings that Web3 companies have, right? You mentioned a bit about this, that there is literally no regulations about Web3 companies currently existing, because, and this is something as a developer I understand, because startups are kind of tech startups particularly are built by developers primarily, right? And developers build. They don't actually think about marketing. They don't think about accounting. They don't think about business, right? They just want to build, right? But when it has grown and in such proportions, right, when across the world people are building together, and it has grown to such a level, then that is when we need people like you or people like me who come from marketing side of things. So that is where, you know, these regulations also start getting built, the regulations follow, the compliances follow, right? So when a company like a Web3 startup wants to get into a business dealing, and I'm asking this because you have done it in the past, so what are the regulations that are currently not existing for Web3 startups? What you had to build from scratch, and how did you kind of manage this entire transition? Because you are literally, you are also working with a registered company in some country, right? Versus a Web3 startup, which may or may not be registered. I'm not very sure, right? So it may be a DAO system also. I'm not sure. But how does a dealing like that, a business dealing like that work out?
See, the core business dealing is the same as any business dealing between a company. But the only thing I would say is that the first thing you do in a transaction is have a contract or an agreement that solidifies both parties, you know, intentions and everything. So the only thing is that there is no regulation around it per se, but there's no need of, it would be wrong to say there is no regulation around it. There are existing contract laws. Technically, they are the ones that apply. But the problem with Web3 is that the contracts and the, you know, once again, there's a mode of payment discrepancy when you're creating or you're giving certain services that are not defined in the legal sense. So when it comes to business dealings, it's not the lack of regulations. It's the fact that Web3 in general, you know, as you mentioned, people are coming all over from all over the world to build. It's so decentralized with, you know, transactions taking place all over the world. It becomes a little complex. And it's not the lack of regulation. It's the Web3 companies themselves who don't do their due diligence, who don't, you know, establish, who don't properly formulate agreements, who don't properly conduct KYCs. Now, see, if you know that you are under scrutiny in general, your business, your nature of business is such that it can be tomorrow, you know, people can pull you up, a regulator can pull you up. I feel like you should be a little extra careful. You make sure that all your transactions are backed by an agreement, because people are looking at you and their first thought is you are doing something wrong. That is a wrong assumption to have, but yes, because of the nature of your business, because of the fact that you can do more wrong, you know, you... Let's face it, there is a huge potential of blockchain misuse. Tomorrow, a company can very easily siphon off money and can be involved in, you know, money laundering, if illegal funding, illegal fund siphoning off very easily in the blockchain as compared to it would have been through fiat currency or in a normal sphere of, you know, work. Because it's accepted that a blockchain company is going to have entities a lot of places all over the world. They're going to conduct transactions via crypto. They're going to have transactions on the blockchain. So there is a huge possibility that, I mean, I will not mince my words and I will say that there are a lot of transactions on the blockchain today as well that are not legal, that are not for the right purposes. It has a huge potential of being misused, and it is being misused today. I think you would agree as well. It is being misused. That is the sad reality. So your business, prima facie, when somebody looks at you, their initial assumption is you are doing something wrong. So what I feel is that you should be extra careful. You make sure that if you're giving any funds or receiving any funds, you have a proper agreement. You have a proper, you know, you have all the other parties' documents. You have done your due diligence. You have an internal, you know, you have your policies formulated that, okay, whenever a regulator comes to you, they ask you, okay, Prashant, you have this company, you are the director, what are you doing to ensure that your company is doing legal things? As a director, you can't go after every employee and make sure your employee is doing legal things. But yes, you can say that I have a company-wide policy. I notify my employees. I have a company policy to conduct KYC checks. I have a company policy to not accept any payment without an agreement. I have a company policy. You know, I have these company policies. I verify every sender's name through the international terrorist list. I verify it through international financial list. I verify it with the Indian regulators. Is this person, you know, there are platforms that do that, that conduct KYC and KYB checks on your behalf. And you're supposed to do that so that tomorrow, if somebody pulls up a transaction that you have done or somebody pulls up a business that you were involved in, that, okay, fine, you know, XYZ company is conducting illegal businesses. Now we are going to go after every company that XYZ conducted business with. You have your ducks in a row that when I conducted business with them, I did all my due diligence. So that is something that Web3 businesses need to be extra careful about, which I feel somewhere or the other they are not doing at all.
True.
True.
you know, at a conventional business, if you're a small business person, just doing, running a business out of your own house, nobody's going to come and ask you, ki, okay, this person you paid 10,000 rupees to, did you take their Aadhaar card? Do you even know who that is? Because everybody understands what that is. But the moment you're involved in Web3 and people are already looking at you with that tinted lens, they already have that presumption that you have paid for an illegal activity only. If you have the Aadhaar card at that time, then you are secure, right? So mostly when somebody goes up, when a Web3 company or when a Web3 business runs in trouble, it's, I would say, three reasons. One is conventional business reasons. You've run your business wrong. You funded it wrongly. You structured it wrongly. That is something that can happen to any business. Second is you have somehow or the other defaulted in your taxes. That is when the regulators will come after you. Third, you were not careful when you were conducting transactions and you have been linked to a bad transaction. Maybe some of your partners or somebody you conducted a business dealing with has gotten into trouble and now you are being scrutinized. It's one of these three things. And for the second and third thing, I feel like that is something you can, it's really preventable. You have people who are doing your books properly and you do it from day one, because once it's gone bad, I had a small time businessman ask me, they're just building their platform. They're also a Web3 startup. And they asked me, that we're so small, we're just starting out. Do we also need to take care of all these compliance issues? And I was like, it's like asking a dentist, should I brush my teeth twice a day? I mean, yes, tomorrow, if you get a cavity, there are solutions to it. But you have gotten a cavity and that is irreversible. If the roots of your teeth have rotten, that is irreversible. So if you go by a compliance, you go by compliances, you make sure that, you know, your accounting. It all comes down to accounting and holding people accountable. You're doing everything. You're keeping a record of everything and you're doing it properly. All your ducks are in the row. Nobody's going to come after you. And even if you have done something wrong, even if you have transacted with the wrong person, if your liability ends at your due diligence, as long as you can show, I did my due diligence, even if that transaction has turned into something wrong, you are at least safe from that part. The only problem with Web3 is that because a lot of people, say, even by nature of, if you're transacting with a DAO or if you're conducting a business dealing with a DAO, how do you make sure that all your ducks are in the row? Because there is no background check that you can run on somebody. They don't have any, entity documents that you can collect for your records. Nobody can sign an agreement because it's a DAO. If it is a DAO in its true sense, I'm not talking about DAOs that have three governing or three majority holders or, you know, we have a multi-sig wallet that is controlled by these two people only, but we are a DAO. So that is a different thing. Of course, that is the route that people end up taking. But, you know, from a regulatory standpoint, Web3 companies, a lot of people in Web3 don't want to go through compliances because their ducks are, their own, they don't have the proper documentation themselves or they are involved in something illegal. I cannot tell you how many times we conducted KYC checks on so many people in my past businesses, in my past jobs, and they turned out to be wanted criminals. And, people who had been disqualified by the government to hold businesses, who had fraud convictions against them. Now, if you conduct business with them, of course, you will get into trouble. You know, that is not Web3, Web2, non-Web.
True.
What else can I say? So that is the problem with Web3, that, you know, a lot of people are using the space as a cover. And that is what's giving all other people who are doing good the bad name. Because they are the ones in the eye of the, you know, in the eye of the public. Okay, this person, okay, this company has failed. This is crashing. This is going down. So that is what it ends up doing. It's not that difficult to meet compliances from a business standpoint, not from a regulatory standpoint of, you know, crypto and all of those things. I already explained that is difficult even from a lawmaker's point of view. But from a purely business standpoint, if you have a company, it's not that hard. You look at CoinDCX is doing so well. WazirX got into so much trouble, but CoinDCX is doing so well. You have Bikonomi, they are doing so well in spite of, you know, they're completely Indian. They have an Indian establishment. So that apart, from a business standpoint, it's not that difficult. India makes it a little more difficult in terms of paperwork and red tapes and, you know, the number of offices you have to visit. And, you know, once you get into it, that process is a little complicated. But it's not that hard from a business standpoint.
Got it. And so many questions in my mind and more dental references coming up. But for you guys in the audience. But in terms of raising investment, right? When companies like Web3 startups are raising investments, and this is something also you have worked in the past. So what are the things that they should be careful about when raising investment from international sources, especially through crypto or, you know, through token sales or anything like that? What are the things that Web3 startups in India should be careful about?
The first thing when you're raising money or, you know, this is more of a financial question than a legal question, because you need to have a proper financial model. When you're raising money, it's not based on your value as a web. I mean, it's not based on your Web3 nature. It's anybody who's investing in you is basing their investment on your business value, like how strong you are as a business. So the only trick when it comes to from the legal standpoint is you're getting so much money from outside. You get, you know, you're under the, you have to adhere to FEMA regulations, foreign exchange management regulations. You have to adhere to foreign direct investment regulations. You will adhere to them normally, like any conventional business would. Because of course, you know, a lot of people getting money from outside would probably be getting them from the wrong places. So, it's more of a financial question, but if you're looking to raise money, the first thing you need to do is ensure that your valuation and the type of, first of all, you ensure that the people who are investing in you, especially at a beginning stage, even though it is difficult because you're more of beggars than choosers at that stage, but you have to sort of ensure that the people who are investing in you have a good, solid, internationally acclaimed profile. It's not, you know, some random people who are investing in you. Then there are certain guidelines that you can take care of. As I mentioned, there are financial crime lists. There are certain declarations that, you know, you can take from a person. So legally, in general, I mean, even if you probably opened a mutual fund, you would know that there are FATCA declarations that you have to sign. So it's something similar. When you're getting money from somebody, you have them sign that, you know, I'm not a politically exposed person. I'm not holding positions of power anywhere. I am this. My funds are coming from a genuine place, and you ensure that you are either, you know, that there's only a certain percentage of money you can get from a particular company from outside of India in a particular time frame. There are all FDI regulations. I don't want to get into the whole circular, it's going to be very boring. But the biggest thing that you have to do is make sure that you have a financial model in place, your valuation, so that tomorrow, if anybody asks you, if anybody, you know, goes through your books, if anybody looks through your investors, at the face of it, it looks legit. It doesn't feel like, okay, your business idea is zero, but people have invested millions in you. Then that is immediately you feel that, you know, okay, this is some money laundering going on here on, because you don't have any business entity. In actual numbers, if a real person or, you know, if the government was to make a valuator sit and valuate your business, your valuation would be X. But the funding you received is X times 10. So, you know, that is something that you should be very careful of, that you have a good finance person on board who's giving you a proper valuation, and all your, you know, from a financial standpoint, all your ducks are in the row in that sense. That is the only thing you need to be careful of, prima facie, when it comes to investments. FDI regulations, foreign exchange management, and make sure that your valuations are on point. And make sure that your investors are legit. Four things.
And the fifth thing is, you can reach out to Shubha if you have any questions around this law particularly. So any startups out there looking to raise money, first, I would urge you to contact Shubha. She would help you with the legal aspect of raising money. And
no, please first reach out to a financier and show him your books of accounts. I can't do anything legally if your accounts are all messed up. You know, your value, your... I had a business reach out to me and say, we're going to sell our token. We're going to value our company at $2 million. I'm like, how can you value your company at $2 million? You are 3 employees in total. This is just a business idea. You have not trademarked a name. You have not done anything. You just have a business idea. You're valuing it at $3 million. How? I said, just because we thought $3 million is a good number. No, that is not how it works. Even if you're a Web3 service, you know, your valuations, your numbers should add up. They shouldn't just be absurd. And because the moment you start raising, see, as long as you're raising, you know, you're flying under the radar, you're a small business, nobody's going to come after you. It's only when you start receiving money and when you hit that valuation, that is when everybody's eyes are on you. That is when it benefits the regulators also to come after you, because now they're not sure, how did this happen? Now we want to know. Now you bring out your books and we will see how you have raised this money. So that is the problem, you know. If you get too ambitious without safeguards and without proper numbers, that is what happens.
Cool. Got it. Subha, my last question is around careers in Web3, that you have also built a career for yourself in the Web3 space, and being from a non-technical standpoint, right? What does it mean for people who want to move into this space as a career building activity? Even and particularly for women, right? And what are the opportunities that are currently available, and what are the scope of sectors that are currently hiring on Web3? Can you talk a bit about the overall perspective of how to build a career in the Web3 space?
Of course. So first of all, if there's anybody who's watching this podcast who's probably in 9th or 10th, or who can probably somehow opt for science, please go into tech. If somebody had told me about this when I was in 10th, I would have opted, I would have cried my way through it. I would have done whatever it had taken. But tech salaries are insane. I have myself drafted agreements for people who are younger than me, who are as old as me, who have done their graduation from obscure colleges, who are earning millions of dollars every year with like insane leisure and easy and hardly any working hours, at least on the face of it, from a contractual point of view. So if you can do it. That is my first.
That is something I would disagree with you, actually, Subha, because I have studied science in my college. I have been an engineer through and through, and I have left engineering and the tech specific space and moved to a marketing space, which was kind of a big career change in my opinion. But sorry to interrupt you. Go on.
Of course. No, see, realistically, of course, there's no way I would have lasted even a day. But honestly, if it is, you know, something that I feel like if it is something that you can do, if it's just, you know, you're blocking yourself mentally from it, I feel like tech, it's the truth. You would agree with it. Tech is paying insanely high right now. Tech, the sky is the limit beyond that. Tech is just, I mean, no way. Coming to non-tech jobs, I personally recommend everybody, whoever I meet, whoever my colleague, my friends, I keep telling them they should switch to Web3 because you have insane number of benefits. You have, there is a huge lack of talent. Okay, let's go systematically. Now, Web3 does offer you a lot of opportunities. But the first thing you need to be careful about is that right now, the space is a little volatile. Yes, there is a lack of regulation. It's still developing. There are businesses that are coming up. There are businesses that are shutting down. There are businesses on hiring freezes. I know a couple of companies who shut down hiring abruptly, who had massive layoffs in Web3, not just because of a failure of business model or them failing as a company, but because of regulatory standpoint as well. For example, Polygon had to lay off their legal and finance team due to regulatory standpoint. They had to, they had no other option but to do that. So it is a bit of a volatile space. And I do understand that if you're somebody who is looking for stability right now, who wants to ensure that, you know, they are completely, they're secure right now. At least for now, Web3, going full Web3 might not be the right choice right now, especially if you feel that, you know, I want a steady paycheck every month. I want to ensure that this much money is coming into my account because I need it. I will be upfront about it. I have some friends who have to earn a living, and as lucrative as this field is for them, it is a bit, and I would say having somebody who suffered a layoff. The only reason I am working in Web3 and the only reason I could continue working in Web3 was because I was fortunate enough to have a backing right now that even if I was not earning or even if I was not out of work for a while, I could sustain myself. I had the savings for that. So right now, that is a disclaimer that has to be that is something you need to know. But if you're somebody who can afford to get into Web3, see, the first thing is that it is a huge field. There is a huge lack of talent. As we discussed, Prashant mentioned, you know, the whole idea of being paid with crypto, being associated with unconventional workplaces, it deters a lot of people from working in this sphere. So right now, there's a huge dearth of talent. A company, yes, requires developers and tech people to, you know, develop the whole thing, but the most important, when I was looking for a job in Web3, every company would be hiring at least HR, marketing, and accounting. These three things, if you're a company, you always need these three things. Legal, you can still outsource. Accounting, maybe to an extent you can outsource, but if you're a, you know, marketing and HR is something you, marketing, especially marketing, unless you can market yourself, there's, you know, you can't do anything. You can be the best thing in the world. You can have the best business idea in the world. But if you can't market yourself, then you're nothing. So your entire business depends on how well you can market yourself. So marketing, HR and accounting, these three. And now, slowly, compliance, regulations, legal, I hope that slowly it will build up to. The Web3 space does not function the same way as, you know, conventional businesses do. As a marketer, you will not market a Web3 company. The marketing strategies will be different. The marketing techniques will be different. Your, you know, mode of marketing would be different. You can't just simply have promotional events in a conventional sense. There is a lot of thought that goes behind. Same with HR. When you have a global workforce, you can't manage them the way, you know, a conventional workforce manages. Right now, there are people who are specializing in remote work management. I have come across remote work champions, and Polygon especially has a head of remote work department. You know, companies working remotely, now imagine the kind of work opportunities that are cropping up. If you're not somebody, you don't really enjoy HR, you don't really enjoy marketing, but there's unconventional, your skill set, as long as you can put your mind to it, you can come up with new things, you can get into the industry, no experience required. In fact, a lot of people with dozens of years, decades, I would say, of conventional experience would fail in front of somebody who has no experience but has the brains to, you know, come up with a strategy to be able to do the work. And that is the best part about Web3 right now. They are valuing talent and genuine skill over experience and, you know, having a degree and having the qualifications on paper. So that is something that is huge right now. Web3 companies, obviously, you know, most of them work in a global sphere, so you can work remotely. I don't know why companies are even working in office right now. I think offices should all be dismantled. If you're somebody who prefers, in fact, I know people who used to laugh at me. Even right now, a lot of people criticize me that, you know, you're so young. Why are you working remotely? How will you network? How will you progress in your career? How are you productive? But once they realize that they spend an hour in a commute every day, they come home tired, spend their entire day with people they don't, I mean, I would not say they don't like their colleagues, but, you know, there's a difference in spending the whole day at your comfort zone with your family, taking a few minutes off, traveling. I can do a whole lot of other things while I'm working, and I can't, and without compromising either of them. So Web3 offers you a lot of freedom. When it comes to work opportunities, I would say two things: women and India. two categories, Indians and women, all over the world. In general, the harsh truth is it is difficult for a woman to be working, especially past a certain age. There are certain expectations that your family, that your society attaches to you that makes it difficult for you to continue working. And frankly speaking, okay, as a business, even I would feel, I might think twice about hiring a woman if I know that, okay, no, I will have to give her maternity benefits also. I can't keep her past this, you know, I can't ask her to stay till 12 a.m. in my office. I can't ask her to, you know, work till this date. So it makes it difficult to be a woman in corporate, whether we like it or not, whether we want to accept it or not, it's the truth. But when you're working in the Web3 sphere, when you're working remotely, you can work at your own leisure. You don't have to worry about compromising either sphere. My mom took a career break when, you know, I was born because she was pushed out of her company. When she got pregnant, her company unofficially pushed her out. They don't ask you to resign, but they, you know, they attach expectations to you. Of course, you're stuck either way. And then she chose to take a career break. But now she's willing, okay, fine, if I can work from the comfort of my own home, why not? And she is looking to foray back into, a work sphere. And that, I feel like for women, this is a huge opportunity. Women looking to venture back into, the working space in a corporate world, especially when they feel that an office or going to office every day is not feasible for them. I think it's excellent. It is something that, you know, the company doesn't need to worry about giving you that many benefits. You are, and as a woman, of course, you are getting all the, you're getting more opportunities. You already, there's a lack of talent, you have the skill set, you satisfy the company, you work according to however you want to. So for women, it's a great thing. Second thing I would say for Indians, now, okay, look at Polygon, right? They offer you remote work with the benefit of they send you a device to work on. So even if you don't have a laptop, you don't have a computer, the company is sending you. On top of that, they are giving you $2,000 per annum for personal and professional developments. You can keep taking additional courses and develop your professional skills. That means that right now, somebody sitting in a remote part of the country, as long as they speak the language, as long as they have a stable internet connection, or even if they have an unstable one, the company is willing to pay for you to get all the equipment, develop your own skills, as well as going to pay you a salary. So I feel like Web3, working in Web3, solves all of our unemployment problems. Even if you are somebody who doesn't have the skills, even if you feel like, okay, you know, I don't have a fancy degree, or there are so many things that I can't do. There are so many positions. As a company, you need so much logistic support. You need somebody just to sit and sift through emails. Make sure, you know, I need somebody, you know, I can draft agreements, I can keep a track of them, but somebody needs to make sure the dates on it are all correct. Then somebody needs to make sure they are being renewed and re-signed at the end of each year. So there are a lot of logistic support that a person needs as well, that India can provide en masse. We are cheap labor. You are going to get a salary. You are going to develop your skills while on the job, making you 10 times more employable a year down the line. So I feel like, why not? This is somewhere that I feel like India is truly failing. This is not something that, that requires a very complex set of legislations or regulations. This is something that just needs an idea. Modi ji had a Make in India idea. I think they should definitely have a work from India policy. Fine. Don't deal in crypto. You're hesitating with the blockchain transactions. You advertise yourself that, you know, you hire from our country and we will give you some tax benefits. You will not have to do this. You will not have to do that. Nobody will want to hire from anywhere but India. You get such cheap and quality labor, and it's going to benefit us so much. And it's all because of this Web3 space. I mean, right now, I feel like this is something that needs to be screamed off the top of rooftops. That needs to be on billboards. Like, what are you doing right now? Not Web3. Go to a Web3 company and start working right now.
Subha, that's all the questions I had. Thank you so much for sharing these insights and making so easy for us to understand legalese, because that itself is an aspect I would say that is very difficult to do, and of course love the dental references. Thank you so much for sharing these insights with our audience today, and I wish you all the best in your career and in your future in the Web3 space as well.
Thank you so much, you too.